My advice is to go with the flow and take it one day at a time. And again, what you're feeling today is perfectly normal. I'd rather not feel this way at all. Who would? But I have a hunch that you'll feel better as soon as you talk to him again. That's the way it usually works. Maria pushed her lonely piece of sushi around, finally beginning to feel the first pangs of hunger. I hope you're right. Of course I'm right. Love makes everything complicated, and emotions always go wild in the beginning. But when it's real, you should hold on tight because we're both old enough to know that true love doesn't come along all that often. After lunch with Jill, Maria did feel better. Maybe not entirely normal, but at the very least somewhat centered again. The more she thought about it, the more she recognized that Jill had been right about pretty much everything. Falling in love was a little frightening, and enough to make anyone a bit screwy in the beginning. It had been so long that she'd forgotten what it was supposed to feel like. Jill had also been spot on when she'd assured Maria that talking to Colin would help settle her doubts. He called a little after 4 while he was on his way to work. Although they didn't chat for long, simply hearing his voice seemed to diminish the tension in her neck and shoulders. And when he asked if she was free the following evening and whether they could spend time together, she realized how much she wanted exactly that. The thought of spending time with Colin after work made the following day pass more quickly than usual. Even Barney, who either dropped by her office or called a dozen times to get the latest updates on various matters, couldn't shake her good spirits. When the phone rang halfway through the afternoon, she answered automatically, expecting to hear Barney's voice, only to hear Jill on the other end. "Now he's just showing off," her friend announced. It took a second to identify the voice. "Jill? So either the two of you got into a fight last night and he's hoping for forgiveness, or he's trying to make other men look bad." "What are you talking about?" "Colin, and the bouquet of roses he just sent you." "He sent roses? What did you think I was talking about? The delivery guy is waiting for you."
Maria glanced at her phone, noting the extension.
"Why are you calling from Gwen's phone in the lobby?"
"Because I happened to be talking to Gwen when the delivery guy walked in, and I insisted that I be allowed to call you because this is getting ridiculous. Do you know how often Paul has sent me roses at work? Try never. And if you don't get out here soon, I might take the bouquet and stomp on it because it's making me question my entire relationship again. And believe me, you don't want that on your conscience."
Maria laughed. "No stomping, okay? I'll be right there."
When she entered the lobby, she spotted Jill standing beside a delivery man in a baseball cap who was, sure enough, holding a bouquet of pink roses. Before she could thank him, the delivery guy handed the bouquet to her and abruptly turned away. A moment later, the lobby door was closing behind him almost like he'd never been there at all.
"Charming fellow," Jill commented. "He couldn't even make small talk. He just kept saying your name whenever I asked a question. But you have to admit the bouquet is gorgeous."
Maria had to agree. The buds, enveloped in sprigs of baby's breath, were either closed or just barely beginning to wink open. And as she bent to smell them, she realized that the florist had been thoughtful enough to trim the thorns.
"I can't believe he would do this," she remarked, inhaling the bouquet's delicate scent.
"It's almost sad," Jill said, shaking her head. "He must have serious self-esteem issues, since he's always seeking your approval, I mean."
"I don't think Colin has self-esteem issues."
"Then he must be needy. You should probably break up with him before it gets any worse. You need someone like Paul, a guy who thinks first and foremost about himself."
Maria peered up at her friend.
"Are you finished? Did you get the sense that I'm envious?"
"Yes."
"Then yes, I'm finished. And I take it that the two of you talked, and all is well again? We made plans for tonight, in fact."
She held out the bouquet toward Jill.
"Would you mind holding this while I open the card?"
"Why not? It's not like you're trying to rub it in."
Maria rolled her eyes as she slid the card out and read it. She blinked before reading it a second time, her brow beginning to crease.
"What is it?" Jill asked. "I wonder if they attached the wrong card. This one doesn't make sense."
"What does it say?"
Maria held it open to show Jill.
"It says," she read, "you will know how it feels."
Jill wrinkled her nose.
"Is that a private joke or something?"
"No."
"Then what is it supposed to mean?"
"I have no idea," Maria answered.
growing more puzzled by the minute. Jill handed back the bouquet.
It's a strange thing to write, don't you think?
Definitely strange, Maria conceded.
Maybe you should call him and ask about what he meant.
Maybe, Maria thought.
He's probably at the gym.
So what? I'll bet he has his phone with him. Or, you know what it could be? Maybe the florist made a mistake. He either attached the wrong card or wrote it down wrong.
I guess that's possible, Maria agreed. And though she tried to convince herself it was true, she wondered whether either of them really believed it.
After putting the roses in the vase from the first bouquet of flowers, Maria continued to examine the card until finally deciding, oh, what the hell. Pulling her cell phone from her purse, she rang Colin.
Hey there, he said. You're not calling to cancel on me tonight, are you?
He was breathing hard, and in the background, Maria could hear music and the sound of people running on the treadmill.
No, I'm looking forward to it. Did I catch you at a bad time?
Not at all. What's up?
Just a quick question. I wanted to ask you about your message.
What message?
On the card that came with the roses today. The card said, you will know how it feels, and I'm not sure what you meant by that.
She could hear him breathing on the other end.
It wasn't me. I didn't send you roses today. Or a card.
Maria felt a sudden prickle in the back of her neck.
You will know how it feels?
It was weird enough if Colin had written it, but if it wasn't from him, that made the note strange, even creepy.
What's it supposed to mean? Colin said into the silence.
I don't know. I'm still trying to figure it out.
And you don't know who they came from?
There was no name on the card.
Colin said nothing to that, and trying to hide her own feeling of unease, she changed the subject.
I know you've got to get back to your workout, and I should get back to work. But what time will you be coming by tonight?
How about 6:30? I was thinking that we head down to the Riverwalk and play it by ear. I'm kind of in the mood to move, not just sit. And we can grab a bite while we're there.
Sounds perfect. I've been planted in my chair the last couple of days, and a walk is just what I need.
As they hung up, she was picturing the way he looked in the gym. But then she caught sight of the roses again, as well as the card. The card with no name. You will know how it feels. She examined the card again, wondering if she'd be able to call the florist and find out who ordered them, only to realize that neither the envelope nor the card bore any markings whatsoever.
You're distracted, Colin said as they walked hand in hand on the Riverwalk, the popular promenade along the Cape Fear River.
Because it was midweek, the streets weren't crowded, and though it was still warm, the northerly breeze hinted at the possibility of cooler temperatures in the weeks ahead. For the first time in months, she was glad she was wearing jeans. She shook her head.
I'm just trying to figure out who would have sent me the roses.
Maybe you have a secret admirer.
Aside from you, I haven't met anyone new lately. It's not as though I go out much, either. I'm either visiting my parents, paddleboarding, or at my place.
Except when you're at work.
No one at work would have sent them, she responded.
But even as she said the words, Ken's image popped into her head.
He wouldn't do that, would he? Besides, the message doesn't really reflect someone's attempt to make me feel special. It does just the opposite, in fact.
What about a client?
I guess it's possible, she conceded, but she had trouble believing it.
Colin squeezed her hand.
One way or the other, you'll find out who he is.
You think it's a he?
Don't you?
She nodded, absolutely sure of it, though there was no real indication.
The message bothers me.
She hoped that he'd say something to make her feel better. Instead, he took a few steps before glancing at her.
It bothers me too.
Spending time with Colin somehow lessened her unease, or at least it prevented her from dwelling on who might have sent the flowers and written the note. She didn't have the faintest clue who it might be, other than Ken, and while there was much to dislike about the man, she couldn't imagine him doing something like that. As she and Colin walked, the conversation drifted from one topic to another. Eventually, they stopped for ice cream cones, Colin surprising her by ordering one as well. They ate them as they stood at the railing that offered a view of the USS North Carolina, a battleship that had engaged in extensive action in World War II and had been formally retired, now docked on the other side of the Cape Fear River. She remembered touring it once on a field trip, recalling how cramped it was below decks, the claustrophobic feeling of the narrow corridors and tiny rooms. She wondered how sailors had managed to stay on board for months at a time without losing their minds. They traversed the length of the riverwalk while the setting sun slowly turned the river to gold, then leisurely browsed through whatever shops caught their interest. By the time the moon had begun to glow over the horizon, they finally stopped for dinner, and as she sat across the table from Colin, she found herself hoping that her parents would get to know this side of him, the one that made her feel comfortable and at ease. She wanted them to witness how happy she was when she was with him. On their way back to her condo, she invited Colin to brunch again, even if she wasn't sure her parents were ready for another visit. When they made love that night, it was slow and tender, a deliberate dance as he moved above her, whispering her name and how much she meant to him. She gave herself over to him completely, lost in the moment and lost in him. In the afterglow, she fell asleep with her head on his chest, lulled by the steady rhythm of his heartbeat. She woke up twice, once a little after midnight and the second time an hour before dawn, and in the stillness of those moments she stared at him, still amazed that they'd become a couple and more certain than ever that each of them was exactly what the other needed. When she entered her office Wednesday morning, her first thought was that she needed to get rid of the card. She tore it into pieces and dropped them into the wastebasket, then pulled up to her office computer. Reviewing her messages, she checked whether any of her clients had mentioned sending the flowers, but found nothing. Meanwhile, Barney was waiting for her in the conference room, and it wasn't until nearly noon that she finally got back to her office. In her inbox, she found yet another file that Barney had emailed, accompanied by a message suggesting she get a jumpstart on it, since he needed a summary by tomorrow. Which meant, take out lunch at her desk, again. Glancing over at the roses, she realized she didn't want them in her office. Grabbing the bouquet in her purse, she left the building, rounding the corner toward the garbage bins. She heaved the bouquet into the dumpster and was starting toward her car when she had the sudden sense that someone was watching her. Spotting no one in her vicinity, she dismissed the feeling at first. But it grew stronger, and as she began fishing through her purse for her car keys, she glanced toward the building. There, standing at his office window, was Ken. She dropped her gaze toward her purse again, pretending she hadn't noticed him. What was he doing, and how long had he been standing there? For all she knew, there was someone else in his office, and he was standing near the window with his back to them. But if he had been at the window when she'd walked out, he'd no doubt seen her throwing away the roses. And that wasn't good. If he'd sent them, he was probably going to be angry. If he hadn't, he might assume that she and Colin were on the outs. Either way, she worried that Ken just might feel the urge to drop by her office again for further discussions on whether she was really a team player. Pulling open her car door, she was hit by a blast of heat from the sun-cooked interior, and as soon as she turned on the engine, she turned on the air conditioner. She decided to drive to the organic market, which had an amazing salad bar. And as she exited the parking lot, she checked her rearview mirror, assuming Ken would be gone. But he hadn't left the window. And though he was too far away for her to know for sure, she couldn't escape the feeling that he'd been watching her all along. Returning from the store, she parked in the same spot she'd vacated, deciding to leave the windows cracked to cool the interior. Ken's car was already gone, and if history was any indication, he wouldn't be back until 1:30 or so. Relieved, she tried to settle into work. Between the roses, the message, and now Ken, she felt ready to collect her things and go home. Maybe she could feign a migraine and leave early. But what was the point? Barney would still expect her to complete the work, and even at home, she knew she'd continue to obsess over the day's events. You will know how it feels. How what feels? Because she'd rejected Ken's advances, was he planning to make her work life even more miserable? If so, what would that mean? She tried to force the questions away while putting together a timeline relating to a customer who'd been injured in a fall and was suing a department store. It would take most of the afternoon, and as she began to jot down notes, she observed that her entire profession was part of a giant game, in which the object was to amass billable hours, making attorneys the only guaranteed winners. It was a cynical view, but how else could she explain how she was always so busy, despite the fact that justice was anything but swift? She was still working on cases that had been initially filed years ago, and the case Barney had just assigned her had no chance of reaching the courtroom for at least 18 months. And that's if things went smoothly, which was virtually impossible, since things never went smoothly. So why did Barney need the timeline by tomorrow? What was so urgent? At the back of her mind, she kept picturing Ken as he'd watched her. She wasn't going to let him blindside her again if he dropped by to supposedly discuss her career. She decided to keep her office door wide open, even though the ambient office noise tended to distract her. That way, if Ken did decide to pay her a visit, she'd have a few extra seconds to prepare. From her window, it was possible to see Ken's parking spot. Predictably, the man drove a red Corvette, and at 1:30 on the dot, he pulled in. She half expected him to drop by as soon as he entered the building, but to her relief, he didn't appear. Nor did he swing by later, even to visit the paralegals. When he remained a no-show at 5, she reminded herself not to stay late. She closed down her MacBook and gathered paper copies of her files, loading it all into her bag. Peeking out the window, she did a quick double take when she realized that Ken's car was already gone for the day. Whatever. Tomorrow would likely bring more surprises. Leaving her office, she said goodbye to Jill and headed for her car. As always, she went around to the passenger side door first so she could put her bag on the seat, but as soon as she pulled it open, she let out an inadvertent cry. The bouquet of roses, already shriveling in the heat, was fanned neatly across the seat, as if trying to taunt her. Colin sat across from her in her living room, his elbows on his knees. Maria had called him right after throwing the roses back into the dumpster, and he'd been waiting at her door when she got home.
"I don't get it," she said, still feeling flushed and panicky. "What does Ken want?"
"You know what he wants."
"And he thinks this is the best way to get it? By sending me flowers and a weird unsigned note? And by stuffing the roses back in my car and freaking me out?"
"I can't answer that," Colin said. "I think the real question is what you're going to do about it." He continued to hold her gaze, unmoving, but the tensing of his jaw made it clear that he was as disturbed by the whole thing as she was.
"I don't know that there's anything I can do. The note was unsigned, and I didn't actually watch him put the roses in my car. I can't prove any of it."
"And you're positive it was Ken?"
"Who else could it be? There was no one else around."
"Are you sure?" She opened her mouth to reply, but quickly closed it because she hadn't even considered the alternative. Just because she hadn't seen anyone else didn't mean there actually had been no one else, but the idea was too frightening to contemplate.
"It's him," she said. "It has to be him."
But even to her own ears, it almost sounded like she was trying to convince herself. Chapter 15. Colin. Colin spent the night with Maria. Though she hadn't asked him to stay, he'd known that she hadn't wanted him to leave. She'd been on edge most of the evening, unable to eat, and he could sense her mind drifting off. After she'd finally fallen asleep, he lay awake staring at the ceiling, trying to put the pieces together. She'd told him enough about Ken to give Colin a pretty good picture, and he'd been fighting the urge ever since to pay the man a visit. The sexual harassment was bad enough, but Ken was a bully as well, and Colin knew from his own experience that people like that didn't stop abusing their power unless someone made them, or put the fear of God into them. However, Maria had made it clear that she didn't want Colin to talk to Ken or even go anywhere near him, if only for Colin's own good. Colin understood that. The man was a well-known lawyer, and even a credible threat might be enough to put Colin behind bars. He had no doubt that Margolis and the local judges would make sure of that. Still, the situation had felt more confusing the more they'd talked about it. The note, combined with the fact that the roses had been placed in her car, felt like a threat. It felt personal. And while Ken had trouble controlling his libido and had been standing at the window, the rest of it didn't add up. What was the point of the note? How had Ken known Maria would decide to throw the roses away at that moment? or if Ken had planned to put them in the car, why had he continued to stand in the window, knowing that Maria would no doubt assume he was guilty? He had to know that scaring Maria would make it more likely that she'd report his harassment. And what if another employee in the office had noticed him retrieving the roses from the garbage and placing them in Maria's car? Would he have been willing to take that kind of risk? Most of the offices had windows. All of which meant, what? If Ken had done it, he'd slipped off the mental building ledge and was plummeting toward the ground, obviously unable to think clearly. And if it wasn't Ken? That was the question that bothered him most. When Maria woke in the morning, Colin offered to follow her into work, but she told him that she'd be fine. It wasn't until he was driving back to Evans that he realized he was as edgy about the whole thing as she'd been the night before. Angry, even, and as soon as he got home, he tossed on his workout gear and was out the door. He went for a run and put the music volume on high, picking up his pace until his breathing grew labored. When he finally felt drained of his anger, he experienced a slowly emerging clarity. He'd do what Maria asked and stay away from Ken, but that didn't mean that he was willing to sit back and do nothing. No one was going to frighten Maria and get away with it. "Have either of you considered calling the police?" Evan asked. They were at the table in Evan's kitchen, a few minutes after Colin had offered Evan the Cliff Notes version of all that had happened, including what he planned to do. Colin shook his head. "The police won't do anything." "But someone broke into her car." "Her car was unlocked. The windows were open, nothing was taken, and there was no damage. The first thing they'll ask is, what's the crime? And then they'll ask who did it, and all she'll be able to offer is her opinions."
"What about the message? Aren't there stalking laws?"
"The note is weird, but there's no clear threat. And there's no proof that the person who sent the flowers was the same person who put them in her car. I sometimes forget that you've had a lot of experience in this area, but I'm still not sure why you think you need to take care of it."
"I don't need to do it. I want to."
"And what if Maria doesn't like your plan?" When Colin didn't answer, Evan waved a hand. "Because you plan on telling her, right? Since you're all about honesty?"
"It's not that big of a deal."
"You didn't answer my question."
"Yes, I'll tell her."
"When?"
"Today."
"And if she asks you not to?" When Colin didn't answer, Evan sat up straighter.
"You'll do it anyway, because you've already made your decision, am I correct?"
"I want to know what's going on."
"You do know that this is what you've done in the past, right? Do whatever the hell you want, your future be damned."
"I'm making phone calls. I'll talk to people." Colin shrugged. "It's not illegal."
"No argument there. But I'm talking about what you might decide to do afterwards."
"I know what I'm doing."
"Do you?"
When Colin didn't respond right away, Evan leaned back in his seat.
"Did I tell you that Lily wants the four of us to go out together this weekend?"
"No."
"She was thinking Saturday night. She wants to meet Maria."
"Okay.
Shouldn't you check with Maria first?"
"I'll talk to her, but I'm sure she'll be fine with it."
"What are you thinking about doing?"
"Dinner, and then afterwards we'll find someplace fun. I think all those lessons put her in the mood to go dancing."
"Salsa dancing?"
"She says I don't have the rhythm for it. It'll be some other kind of dancing."
"At a club?"
"Since you obviously escaped without trouble last time, Lily's of the opinion that you can do it again."
"Okay.
I have another question, though."
Colin waited as Evan stared across the table at him.
"What happens if you do find the guy?"
"I'll talk to him."
"Even if it's her boss?"
When Colin didn't answer, Evan shook his head.
"I knew I was right."
"Right about what?"
"You don't have the slightest idea what you're getting into."
While Colin understood that Evan was worried, he didn't think his concern was justified. How hard could it be to figure out whether Ken sent the roses? All it would take was a few phone calls, some pointed questions, and a photo. Lord knows he'd been on the receiving end of countless interrogations, and he knew that getting answers was often about presence and expectation and sounding official. Most people wanted to talk. Most people couldn't shut up, even when it was in their best interest. He figured that if he was lucky, he'd have his answer by mid-afternoon. In the kitchen back at his place, he opened his computer and did a quick search for Ken Martinson. Not hard to find. The guy was even more connected than Colin expected.
but there were fewer photos than he'd thought there would be. And none were what he really wanted. Too far away. Too blurry. Even the photo on the firm website had to be at least 10 years old. At the time, Ken had a goatee, which altered his appearance to a significant degree. Colin would have to take his own photo, he decided. Except he didn't have a high-quality camera with a telephoto lens. He doubted whether Evan had a decent camera either. Evan wouldn't have spent the money. The guy was tighter than a tick. But Maria had one. He called her cell and left a message asking if she was free for lunch. By the time she texted him back to see whether he could meet at 12:30, he was in class. But as he read her text, the professor droning on in the background, he realized that he'd been holding more tension in his neck than he'd noticed. He forced himself to take deep, steady breaths. "You want to borrow my camera?" They were seated on the outdoor patio of a small cafe, waiting for their food to arrive. Though Colin hadn't eaten since the night before, he wasn't hungry. "Yes," Colin nodded. "Why?" "I need a photo of Ken." She blinked. "Excuse me?" "The only way to know for sure who ordered the flowers is to find the florist. I can then show the florist the photo and ask if he's the one who bought them."
"What if he ordered by phone?"
"If he paid with a credit card, I'll get the name."
"They won't give it to you."
"Maybe, maybe not. I'd still like to borrow your camera."
Maria debated before shaking her head.
"No."
"Why not?"
"For starters, he's my boss. He also knows what you look like, and if he sees you, it's only going to get worse for me around there. Besides, I saw Ken this morning, and I have the sense it's already over."
"You saw him?"
"He came to talk to Barney and me about one of our cases first thing in the morning, to let us know he'd heard that it was finally on the docket."
"You didn't mention that when I called."
"I didn't know I had to."
He caught the first hint of frustration creeping into her tone. "How did he act?"
"It was fine," she stated. "He was normal."
"And you weren't bothered when he showed up?"
"Of course I was. My heart practically jumped out of my chest, but what could I do? Barney was right there. But Ken didn't try to talk to me alone, and he didn't spend any time with the paralegals either. He was all business."
Colin clasped his hands together beneath the table. "With or without your camera, I'm going to find out who sent you the flowers."
"I don't need you to solve my problems, Colin."
"I know."
"Then why are we still talking about this?"
Colin kept his expression steady. "Because you still don't know with any certainty that Ken was the one who did it. You're making an assumption."
"It's not an assumption."
"Would it be so wrong to make sure?" There was a time, Colin knew, when he wouldn't have given a damn about any of this. There was no reason to get involved. She was right, after all. It was her problem. And frankly, he had enough problems of his own. However, Colin considered himself an expert in anger. And at its heart, that's what this was all about. At the hospital, he'd learned the differences between overt and covert anger. In his own life, he'd been well-versed in both. At the bars, when he was in the mood to fight, his anger had been overt. His agenda was clear, with no hidden meanings, no shame, and no regret. In the first couple of weeks at the hospital, though, he hadn't been able to act out in any way if he became angry. The doctors had made it clear that if he became violent, if he so much as raised his voice, he'd end up in the acute care ward, which meant being stuck in a communal room with a dozen other people and mandatory lithium in doses that made him feel dull, while doctors and nurses watched his every move. That was the last thing he wanted. Instead, he'd pushed his anger down, trying to keep it hidden. But after a while, he realized that the anger didn't go away. Instead, it simply transformed from overt to covert. Subconsciously, he began to manipulate people. He sensed exactly what buttons needed to be pressed to piss someone off, and he jabbed at those buttons until they finally blew. One by one, others were sent to the acute care ward while he played innocent, until his doctor finally called him on what he'd been doing. Countless hours of therapy later, Colin finally understood that anger was anger, whether overt or covert, and equally destructive either way. "That's what someone was acting out here," he thought. "Anger with the intent to manipulate. Whoever it was wanted Maria's emotions to start going haywire, and while it was covert for now, he sensed this was only the beginning." To Colin's mind, that made Ken even less likely as a suspect. but then it was the only name he had. No choice but to start there. After Maria reluctantly handed him the key to her condo at the end of lunch, he drove to her place and retrieved the camera. He turned it on, making sure the batteries had enough juice, and ran through the various settings. Checked the zoom and took some shots off her balcony before realizing that he really needed to shoot faces to know how close he'd have to be. After tucking the key into a planter pot near the door as instructed, he drove to the beach, where no one would think twice about a man with a camera. It wasn't crowded, but there were enough people around for him to get what he needed, and he spent an hour photographing people from various distances. In the end, he calculated that he could be no more than 50 yards away. Good, but not great. Ken might still be able to recognize him. He'd need a vantage point where he wouldn't be spotted. Most of the historical buildings on either side of the block where Maria's office stood were two or three stories tall, with flat roofs. Cars lined both sides of the street, and though there were a few trees, none was big enough to hide behind. The foot traffic was not heavy, but steady. Remaining inconspicuous while hunkering down for an hour or more with a camera in hand was pretty much out of the question. Raising his gaze, he focused on the buildings he'd just walked past, the ones opposite the office entrance. The distance was good and the angle was perfect, but it raised the question of how, or even if, he could get up there. He recrossed the street, hoping to find a fire escape. Modern 2 to 3 story buildings didn't have them, and as soon as he reached the narrow alley that ran behind the block, he realized he was half lucky. The buildings directly opposite the law office had no roof access, but the 3-story building next to those had an old-fashioned drop-down ladder, 10 or 11 feet up, that led to a metal landing on the second floor. Tough, but not impossible to reach, and though the angle the building offered wasn't ideal, it was his best and only bet. Heading down the alley, he put the strap around his neck and tucked the camera beneath his shirt. He took a couple of explosive steps toward the wall, hoping to use it as a springboard to launch himself even higher and gain the last few inches he knew he'd need. He did it just right, grabbing onto the bottom rung with both hands. With a hard jerk upward, he got one hand on the next rung up, repeating the process until he reached the landing. Thankfully, the ladder was attached to the building above that, and a few minutes later, he was on the roof. Down on the street, no one appeared to have noticed him. So far, so good. He made his way to the corner closest to Maria's office. The lip of the roof was low, no more than 6 inches, but some cover was better than none. Thankfully, the gravel was smooth here. There were no big pebbles, though these were scattered everywhere else. There were a bunch of gum wrappers, though. As he got into position on his stomach, he brushed those away. He aimed the camera and settled in to wait. To his surprise, he could actually see Maria as she worked at her desk in her office. He could also make out her car, and beyond that, the garbage bins. Her car was parked in her usual spot, and a few spots down, he saw Ken's Corvette. A bit more than an hour later, the first people in the office began to stream out, usually one at a time, but sometimes in pairs. Paralegals, and yes, as Maria had mentioned, all of them were attractive. A couple of guys in their 40s, Maria's friend Jill. Several other people followed a few minutes later by Maria. He followed her with the lens, thinking that she was moving more slowly than usual. When she reached the corner of the building, she glanced around, no doubt trying to find him. He watched her forehead form a frown before she finally headed to her car. Focusing on the entrance again, he still saw no sign of Ken. Just when he began to wonder whether the onset of dusk would blur the detail he wanted, Ken finally pushed through the door. Colin held his breath, snapped off a dozen photos before Ken turned into the parking lot, then rolled to his side to examine the images, hoping that one or two would be good enough. They were. He waited until Ken pulled away before getting up and making his way down from the roof the same way he'd gone up. Again, no one appeared to notice him, and by the time he reached his car, dusk was settling in. He stopped at a drugstore on the way home and selected 2 of the photos for processing before heading back to Maria's. He'd promised to bring her camera back.
"No wonder I couldn't find you," she said to him later, the photos on her kitchen table. "So, tomorrow?"
"I'll start calling florists and hopefully find out the truth."
"And if it was a phone order?"
"I'll tell them the truth, that you were wondering whether the wrong card was attached to the delivery, and that you're wondering who they're from."
"They might not tell you."
I'm just asking for a name, not the number. I bet that most people would be willing to help.
And when you find out that it was Ken?
It was the same question that Evan had asked him earlier, and he'd pondered it on and off since then.
The decision as to what to do next would be yours.
She nodded, tight-lipped, before finally standing from the table and moving to the balcony doors. She stood before them, saying nothing for a long moment. Colin rose from his seat. When he was close, he put a hand on her lower back and felt something collapse beneath his touch.
I'm just so tired of talking about it. I'm tired of even thinking about it.
Let's get out of here and go do something that will take your mind off it.
Like what?
How about I surprise you?
Staring out the window of the Camaro as it sat between a couple of minivans, she made no move to get out of the car.
This is your surprise?
I thought it might be fun.
Mini golf? Seriously?
Maria eyed with obvious skepticism the cheery lights that surrounded the entrance. Beyond the glass door, she could make out an arcade. Off to the left was the miniature golf course, complete with rotating windmills as part of what Colin guessed was a Scandinavian theme.
Not just mini-golf, it's glow-in-the-dark mini-golf.
And I take it that you've mistaken me for a 12-year-old?
It's a good distraction. And when was the last time you played?
I just told you, when I was 12. Kevin Ross had his birthday party here. But he pretty much invited the entire 6th grade, and my mom came too, so it wasn't exactly a date.
But it was memorable. Afterwards, if you want, we can try the laser maze.
Laser maze?
I saw the banner a couple of months back when I was driving by. I think it's like that scene in Get Smart with Steve Carell where you have to try crossing a room without breaking the beams.
When she didn't answer, he went on.
I'd hate to think you're just afraid I might win, and that's what this is all about.
I'm not afraid of losing to you. If memory serves, I think I was the best in my class.
Is that a yes?
You're on.
Friday morning, Colin woke early and was out the door before dawn. He'd put in a quick 6 miles and visited the gym before going online and gathering the phone numbers he needed. He'd been surprised to learn that Wilmington had more than 40 florists, in addition to grocery stores that also sold flowers, which meant he'd be busy. He felt good about the night before. Though it took Maria a few holes and a couple of lucky putts before she began to relax, by the time they'd finished, she was laughing and even dancing on the green after she sank a hole-in-one on the 16th hole to pull ahead for good. Hungry, they skipped the laser maze and he brought her to a roadside stand near the beach that specialized in fish tacos, which they washed down with ice-cold beer. He asked if she'd be willing to go out with Evan and Lily. She told him of course, and when she kissed him goodnight, he could tell that the evening had been just what she needed. At the breakfast bar, he began making the first of his calls, hoping he'd be able to knock out the list in a couple of hours, only to realize that the person he needed to talk to wasn't always immediately available, which meant a second or even third call to the same number. Still, he ran through the explanation and questions he thought might work best. That the wrong card might have been attached. Had a delivery been sent to the office? Had a bouquet of pink roses even been assembled? And fortunately, most of the people he spoke with had been more than willing to help. By the time he had called all but a handful of shops, it was early afternoon, and he'd begun to suspect that the last ones would say the same thing the others had said, that they hadn't been the florist who assembled or delivered the bouquet. He was right. Wondering what to do next, he decided to try some out-of-town florists. The only question was which direction to choose. He chose north. He called both florists in Hampstead, then found another 18 in Jacksonville. On his 6th call, at a place named Floral Heaven near the gates of Camp Lejeune, he hit the jackpot. Yes, the owner told him. He remembered the man who'd ordered the bouquet. It had been a cash order, he added. Yes, the store would be open tomorrow, and he'd be there as well. Later that night, as he was tending bar, Colin found his thoughts returning to the fact that someone had gone to an awful lot of trouble to hide his identity. A thunderstorm rolled through on Friday night, bringing with it cooler temperatures. After finishing his run and doing some yard work on Saturday morning, Colin made the drive to Floral Heaven in Jacksonville, a little over an hour away. At the shop, Colin pulled out the photo of Ken and showed it to the man. This wouldn't happen to be the guy, would it? The owner, a portly man in his 60s with spectacles, took only a second before shaking his head.
The man in the photo is a lot older. The guy who brought them was maybe in his late 20s, not that I had that great a look at him. No? He was kind of a strange guy, which is why I remember him at all. He wore a baseball hat and stared at the counter when he talked, sort of mumbled. Just told me what he wanted and walked out the door. He came back an hour later, paid cash, and left.
Did you happen to notice if he was alone?
I wasn't paying attention, he answered. What's this all about again?
As I mentioned on the phone, there was a strange message written on the card.
He didn't ask for a card. I remembered that, too, because everyone always wants to write something. Like I said, he was a strange guy.
Colin's afternoon workout at the gym focused heavily on defensive work and grappling. Surprising him, Daly worked almost exclusively with him, pushing him harder than usual. In his day, Daly had been a beast when it came to groundwork. And more than once, Colin found himself out of position, feeling like he was fighting for his life. By the time the workout ended, he realized that he hadn't thought about the guy in the baseball hat even once. Whoever he was. The preoccupation returned, however, as soon as he stepped out of the ring. Before he reached the locker room, Daly jogged over and pulled him aside.
Can I talk to you for a couple of minutes?
Colin used his still-soaking shirt to wipe the sweat from his face.
How would you feel about fighting next weekend, in Havelock?
Before Colin could respond, Daly went on.
I know you're 3 weeks out, but I got a call earlier from Bill Jensen. You know Bill, right?
The promoter, Colin said.
You know how much he's done for our fighters over the years, including you, and he's in a bind. Anyway, Johnny Reese is headlining the event, and the guy he was supposed to fight broke his hand a few days ago and had to scratch. Reese needs a new opponent.
As soon as Daly said the name, Colin remembered the conversation with Evan from the diner.
The dude moves like a cat,
Daly continued.
Jensen's been trying to find someone, and it turns out that you're the only guy in the weight class who actually might make it interesting. This is Reese's last fight before he goes pro, and he's got the goods. Former NCAA wrestling champ, getting better at striking, for the most part, fearless. He actually has a shot at making it to the UFC in a year or two, which is why Jensen doesn't want to cancel. That's why I went so hard with you today. I wanted to know if you were ready to take him on.
I'm not good enough for Reese.
You had me on the defensive more than a few times today. Trust me, you're ready.
I'll lose.
Probably, Daly admitted. But it'll be the best fight of his life to this point because you're better than you think you are.
He twisted sweat from the bottom of his shirt.
I know I'm asking you to take a risk here, but it would help us out. You too. Jensen's the kind of guy who never forgets a favor, and you'd be helping us get some good publicity for my gym.
Colin wiped his face again before deciding. Why the hell not?
Okay, he said.
When he left the gym, his mind was on Johnny Reese. Yet he found himself strangely unexcited, and by the time he'd driven halfway home, he wasn't thinking about the upcoming fight at all. The only things on his mind were the man who had sent the roses and how someone other than Ken could have known Maria had thrown them away.
That's quite the day, Evan commented.
They were on the porch, Colin drinking water and Evan nursing a beer.
Reese, huh? He's pretty good.
Thanks for avoiding the obvious.
Oh, you mean about Maria and her stalker? That's what you wanted to talk about?
Evan paused before going on.
All right. Have you considered the idea that Ken might have hired the guy to buy and deliver the roses?
Then why get them from someplace an hour away?
Maybe the guy he hired is from there.
Colin took a long drink from his glass of water.
Maybe, but I don't think so.
Why not?
Because I don't think Ken has anything to do with this.
Evan picked at the label on his bottle.
If it's any consolation, I think you're right. It isn't her boss. But on the plus side, all your private investigators, stakeout the roof, and photography activities paid off in the end, which means you're not a total idiot, even if you're no closer to learning who it actually is.
I learned something else, too.
What's that?
I'll bet whoever it was watched Maria from that same spot on the roof where I took the picture.
Why on earth would you think that?
Because the gravel had been smoothed out where I was, and there were gum wrappers littered around that hadn't blown away.
meaning that someone had been there recently. And from that vantage point, I could see directly into Maria's office, same thing with her car and the dumpster. Whoever it was could have spied on her for hours. I didn't put the pieces together until right before I talked to you. For the first time, Evan was quiet. Huh, he finally said. That's it? Maybe you're right, or maybe you're wrong. I don't have the answer for you. And now I've got this fight next weekend. So? I'm having second thoughts. Why? Because of everything that's been going on with Maria. You train to fight. You like to fight. You've been offered a fight. What does any of that have to do with Maria? Colin opened his mouth to respond, but nothing came out. You know what? You give me crap all the time about how Lily has me wrapped around her little finger. But it's pretty clear that I have my relationship a lot more figured out than you do. Because right now, you're trying to live your life based on what might happen, or whether you can solve her problem, even when she's told you she doesn't want you to. Do you know how messed up that is? You told me she wanted to watch you fight, right? Ask her to come, take her out for dinner afterwards, and call it a date. Boom, problem solved. Colin offered a partial smile.
I think you want me to fight because you're pretty sure I'm going to lose.
And? Fine, I'll admit it. You're such an endless pain in the ass that it might be fun watching someone smack you around.
When Colin laughed, Evan went on.
Good, so that's settled. On another note, are you excited about tonight?
Tonight?
You and Maria, with Lily and me, we had plans, remember? I made reservations at Caprice Bistro at 7:30, and afterwards we're hitting a club that's playing 80s music.
80s music.
Is there an echo in here? Yes, 80s music. Lily's a closet Madonna fan, a leftover from her supposedly rebellious teenage years, she says. So, we're doing this? As long as Maria's still game, I mean.
Why wouldn't she be?
Maybe because you ruined her mood with what you learned?
I haven't told her yet.
Mr. Honesty? I'm shocked.
I was planning on telling her tonight.
If you do that, make sure you don't make too big a deal about it. I don't need you putting a damper on the evening. For all you know, it was a one-time thing and it's over.
Or maybe, Colin said, it isn't.
Chapter 16. Maria. Colin had been quiet since he'd picked her up, which made Maria nervous, given what he'd been up to for most of the day. Though he volunteered nothing, she knew he was thinking about the flowers. As she watched him respond to her small talk with a distracted air, she felt a pit growing in her stomach. By the time they pulled into the restaurant's parking lot, she couldn't contain herself any longer.
Who sent the roses?
He shut off the engine and told her what he'd learned. She frowned, thinking about it.
If it wasn't Ken, and you don't think Ken hired him, then who is it?
I don't know. She turned toward the passenger window. Beyond the glass, she watched an older couple walking into the restaurant, all smiles, without a care in the world.
I saw Ken again yesterday when I was meeting with Barney, she said in a wavering voice. Other than the fact that he was acting a little distracted, he was completely professional. In fact, he barely seemed to notice me at all. It almost makes me think
that it's not Ken. She could tell by Colin's silence that he'd been able to complete her thought. Let's try not to worry about it tonight, okay? He said. She nodded, feeling the tension in her shoulders.
I'll try. It's hard not to.
I know, he said. But you should probably take a moment to prepare yourself for Lily. I adore her, but she does take some getting used to. Maria forced a smile.
That's a backhanded compliment, you know.
Guess who I learned it from? It took Maria only a second after entering the restaurant to identify Lily. Almost as soon as she and Colin had stepped through the door, a perfectly coiffed, ravishing blonde with eyes the color of turquoise glided toward them. She wore a stylish mid-length dress and a strand of pearls. Practically every man in the restaurant turned to watch her pass. Evan, who was dressed preppy stylish and could have passed for someone still in college, trailed in her wake. Maria noticed his air of breezy confidence. He was clearly comfortable allowing Lily the limelight. Lily's smile never faltered, and as soon as she got close, she took Maria's hands in her own. They were remarkably soft, like a silky baby blanket.
It is an absolute delight for me to have the pleasure of your company this evening. Colin has said so many wonderful things about you.
By then, Evan had reached her side.
And, oh dear, where are my manners? I am Lily, and this handsome man beside me is my fiancé, Evan. It's so wonderful to meet you, Maria.
Hi there, Evan said with genuine warmth. And please don't be offended if Lily doesn't let me get a word in the rest of the evening.
Hush now, Evan,
Lily scolded.
There's no reason to give our new friend the wrong impression about me.
She returned her gaze to Maria.
Please try to forgive him. He's as sweet as can be and more intelligent than he lets on. But he went to state and he was in a fraternity. You know what that means.
At least my university was co-ed, Evan countered.
And as I've assured him repeatedly,
she responded, nudging Maria,
I will never hold that flaw against him.
Despite herself, Maria smiled. It's nice to meet you both. Still holding Maria's hands, Lily turned to Colin.
Colin, you must admit that you weren't being fair to Maria at all when you told me about her. She's absolutely breathtaking.
Then back to Maria.
It's no wonder that you've been all that Colin has been able to think about lately. You must know that you've been the topic of discussion every time we've spoken in recent weeks, and I can certainly understand why.
Letting go of Maria's hand, she kissed Colin on the cheek.
You're very handsome this evening. Did I buy you that shirt?
Thank you, Colin said, and yes, you did.
And that's a good thing, don't you agree? If I wasn't around, you'd probably be wearing one of those awful t-shirts with slogans on them.
I like those shirts. She patted his arm.
I know you do, bless your heart. Now, shall we head to the table? I've been on pins and needles all day, and I want to know absolutely everything about the woman who already has you wrapped around her little finger.
I'm not sure that's quite true, Maria protested.
As true as due north. Colin, despite his stoic demeanor, is actually quite expressive in his emotions once you're familiar with him. Now, shall we?
When she turned for the table, Colin shrugged at Maria as if to say, I told you so. While Maria had become acquainted with the Southern Belle debutante phenomenon among the sorority girls at Chapel Hill, Colin was right. Lily took it to a whole new level. Maria initially assumed it to be partially an act, but as they settled into wide-ranging conversation over dinner, she gradually changed her mind. What was interesting was that as much as Lily could talk, and the girl could talk about anything, she could also draw out information simply by the way she listened. She had a way of leaning forward slightly and nodding when appropriate, making noises of empathy or sympathy, followed by probing questions. Maria never once had the sense that Lily was trying to think of the next thing she wanted to say while Maria was still talking. And to her surprise, she even found herself telling Lily and Evan about the delivery of the roses and its aftermath. At that, the table went quiet, and Lily impulsively covered Maria's hand with her own. Later, while the two women were freshening up in the restroom after dinner, Maria caught Lily's reflection in the mirror. I feel like I did most of the talking, Maria said. I'm sorry about that.
There is absolutely no reason to apologize. You have a lot going on in your life right now, and I'm flattered by your trust in us.
Maria added some lipstick before her voice softened.
You weren't surprised by what Colin did, were you? With the photo and tracking down where the roses came from?
No,
Lily answered.
That's who he is. When he loves someone, he'll do anything for them. It feels like half the time I'm still trying to figure him out.
I'm not surprised, Lily said. At the same time, since you were so honest with Evan and me, you must know that prior to dinner, my loyalties lay completely with Colin. I wanted to meet you so I could make sure that you were everything he said you were.
You really care about him.
I love him like a brother, Lily admitted. He's very important to me, and I know what you're probably thinking. We couldn't be more different, and I didn't understand what Evan saw in him at first either. All those tattoos and muscles and all the violence in his past.
Lily shook her head.
I must have visited Evan 4 or 5 times before I ever said a word to Colin, and when I finally did, the first thing that came out of my mouth was that I thought he should find a new place to live. And do you know what Colin said to me?
Okay,
Maria mimicked, and Lily laughed.
He does that with you, too? Bless his heart. I've been trying to break that habit to no avail, but lately I've come to admit that it suits him. At the time, I do remember being offended. I complained to Evan, and he promised to talk to Colin, but only on the condition that I talk to him first, which, of course, I refused to do on principle.
So who ended up breaking the ice, you or him?
Colin did. I'd purchased Evan a television for his birthday around that time, and it was in the trunk. Colin happened to come across me struggling with the box. He immediately offered to help. He brought it in and asked if I wanted to have it mounted or left in the box, which was something I hadn't thought about. I told him that Evan would do it, but he sort of laughed and said that Evan wouldn't know how to do such a thing. The next thing I knew, he was on his way to the hardware store, and 20 minutes later, he was mounting it on the wall. He'd also picked up a big ribbon and a bow, and it was that, more than anything, that made me wonder whether there was something about him that was worth getting to know. So we talked. It took about 30 seconds of asking him questions before I realized that he wasn't like anyone I'd ever met before.
Colin said you recommended that he go back to college and that you helped him with his studies.
Someone had to. The poor man hadn't cracked a book in years. But he made it easy because once he decided to go back, he was determined to do his best, and he's intelligent. Despite having moved from school to school, he must have picked up something along the way.
And he's Evan's best man?
Lily pulled a tissue from her purse and dabbed at her lipstick as she nodded.
Yes. Of course, my parents are absolutely aghast at the idea. As far as they know, he's Evan's friend, not mine, and they continually hint that I should keep my distance. The first time my daddy saw Colin, he actually flinched, and my mama has gone so far as to suggest that he shouldn't even be invited to the wedding, let alone be the best man. Even when I tell them that he's my friend, too, they pretend they didn't hear me say it. They are rooted in their ways, and I will always be their precious child, bless their hearts.
My mom and dad weren't too thrilled with Colin either.
It's understandable. But unlike my parents, I'll bet yours would give him a chance and eventually change their minds. I did, after all. Even now, I sometimes have trouble understanding it. In all candor, Colin and I don't have much in common. I'd have to agree.
Lily smiled, straightening her pearls before turning to Maria.
Still, there's something about that heartfelt honesty of his, coupled with not giving a damn about what other people think about him, that just gets to me.
Maria couldn't help but smiling in agreement.
You must believe me when I tell you, Lily added, that he's much less rough around the edges than when I first met him. It's been an extraordinary effort on my part,
she winked.
But there's no reason to thank me. You ready? I'm sure the lads are already pining for us.
I don't think Colin pines.
He's pining, she said. He might not admit it, but he is.
I wasn't pining, Colin said on his way to the car. Up ahead, Lily was walking with Evan toward his Prius. I was talking to Evan about my fight.
The one in Myrtle Beach?
No, the one next weekend.
What fight?
Colin filled her in, then added, Evan will be coming. You should come too.
Will Lily come?
No, Colin said. Fighting's not really Lily's thing.
I'm surprised it's Evan's thing.
He always goes to my fights. He enjoys them.
Really? He doesn't seem the type.
And what type is that?
People who resemble you, Maria teased. Big muscles and tattoos, but mainly people who don't look like they'll faint at the first sign of blood.
He smiled. Do you want to come?
Sure, but the same rule applies. You can't get too beat up or it'll bring back memories of that first night we met.
Okay.
You say that now, but the way you talked about Johnny Reese, you might not be able to guarantee it.
No guarantees, he conceded. What did you and Lily talk about when you were in the bathroom?
Mainly we talked about you.
Okay.
No follow-up questions?
No.
How can you not be interested in what we said?
Because that was between you and Lily. It's not my business. And besides, it couldn't have been too bad, or you wouldn't still be holding my hand.
So what kind of club are we going to?
All I know is that it plays 80s music. That's one of Lily's quirks.
Evan told me that listening to Madonna was the way she rebelled when she was a teenager.
Huh, not much of a rebellion.
Not to you or me, but to Lily's parents? I'm sure they wrung their hands for years. They don't like me much.
Maybe you should invite them to a fight, she said. That'll probably change their minds.
She heard him laugh as he opened her door, the sound continuing as he rounded the car to the driver's side. Despite the blaring sound of REO Speedwagon, the scene at the club wasn't at all what she expected. Instead of divorced women and balding men in their 40s trying to relive their youth, the club was populated primarily by students from the university. Maria half expected to spot Serena with her friends. Groups of college girls were dancing in clusters, singing or lip-syncing to the music. Colin leaned closer to her ear.
What do you think?
I feel old, she admitted, but I like the music.
Evan pointed toward the bar, and Colin nodded before reaching for her hand, maneuvering her around tables and groups of people to the thronged bar area. When they were finally able to get the bartender's attention, Colin ordered water, no surprise there. Evan ordered a beer, and both Maria and Lily ordered sea breezes. Halfway through their drinks, a song by Madonna started to play, and a delighted Lily clapped before leading Evan to the floor. Suddenly thinking, oh, what the hell, Maria grabbed Colin's hand, and they followed. The evening sped by as they danced to sets of three or four songs in a row, stopping only for the occasional break. Maria ordered a second sea breeze, and though she hadn't finished the first, she felt giddy and flushed. For the first time in a week, she'd actually been able to enjoy herself. At 11:30, they were able to commandeer a small table for the first time. They were taking a break and debating how much longer to stay when a young cocktail waitress appeared holding a tray of drinks. She placed another sea breeze in front of Maria. Maria waved it off.
I didn't order this.
Your friend ordered it,
the waitress explained, straining to be heard above the music. Maria shot Colin a quizzical look.
You ordered another drink?
When he shook his head, she turned to Evan, who seemed as surprised as Colin. Lily also appeared confused.
Who ordered it?
Maria asked.
Your friend from the bar, the waitress said, turning her head in that direction. The one in the baseball cap.
She leaned in.
He told me to tell you that he was upset that you didn't like the roses he sent you.
Maria gasped. A split second later, she saw a sudden movement as Colin jumped up from the table, causing his chair to tip over. In the moments that followed, Maria was only able to register a series of images, like snapshots caught in a strobe light. Colin taking two steps toward the waitress, his jaw beginning to clench, closing in so quickly that she dropped the tray of cocktails. Evan and Lily getting up from the table, their drinks sloshing over them. Bar patrons turning their way at the commotion. Colin demanding that the cocktail waitress tell him exactly who it was at the bar, ferociously angry, repeating the question. The waitress backing away, terrified. Bouncers beginning to move toward them. Evan taking a step toward Colin, his hands raised. Maria was frozen, rooted to her seat, the waitress's words ringing in her ear. Baseball cap. He was upset you didn't like the roses. He was here. He'd followed her. He'd been following her all along. It was hard for her to breathe, a waterfall of images, the world collapsing inward. Bouncers pushing through the crowd, moving with frightening speed. Colin shouting, demanding to know more about the man who'd ordered the drink. The waitress backing away, beginning to cry. Bystanders beginning to surround them. Evan pushing forward and grabbing Colin's arm. Lily moving toward Maria. Maria felt someone place both hands on her shoulders and begin helping her from her seat. She didn't have the energy to resist, and all at once, she realized that Lily had been the one to whisk her to her feet. She could hear Colin shouting, even as Evan continued to tug hard at Colin's arm. The waitress crying out in terror, strangers circling, with bouncers close behind. Stranger in blue shirt.
What the hell's going on?
Colin to the waitress.
What did he look like?
Stranger with spiked hair.
Chill out, leave her alone.
Waitress through her tears.
I told you that I don't know. He was wearing a hat, I don't know.
Stranger with tattoos.
What the hell's wrong with you?
Evan.
We gotta go.
Colin.
Was he young or old?
Waitress.
I don't know. 20s or 30s? I don't know.
Evan.
Now, Colin, come on!
By then, Lily was leading Maria quickly from the table, and out of the corner of her eye, Maria saw Evan jerk Colin off balance. Colin reacted instinctively, twisting free immediately and quickly regaining his equilibrium, his hands ducking into fighting position. His face was red and tense, the muscles in his neck taut. For an instant, he seemed not to recognize Evan.
Colin, no!
Lily screamed. Evan took a step backward, and as quickly as it had erupted, Colin's rage began to dissipate. By then, the bouncers had reached them, and as Maria watched, Colin slipped his hands behind his back, clasping his left wrist with his right hand. A bouncer grabbed both his arms, looking as angry and adrenaline-filled as Colin had been a moment earlier.
I'll go with you, Colin said. I'll go.
Then, to the waitress who was still crying, he said,
I apologize. I didn't mean to scare you.
But neither the waitress nor the bouncers cared. Colin was dragged outside, and it was only a few minutes later that a squad car arrived, blue lights flashing. Shortly thereafter, a dark sedan pulled up.
Who's that?
Maria asked, standing with Evan out front, arms crossed. Lily had gone back into the club a few minutes earlier. In the parking lot, Colin stood with two officers, one of the bouncers, and a man in a well-used sport coat who was chewing on a toothpick. Evan's tone betrayed his concern. Detective Margolis. He's been waiting for Colin to screw up again.
Why?
Because he thinks Colin should be in prison.
Is that going to happen?
I don't know, Evan said.
But he didn't do anything, Maria protested. He didn't even touch her.
Thank God, or he'd be cuffed by now. And he still might be, unless Lily can work her magic.
What's she doing?
Solving the problem, Evan answered. That's what Lily does. In time, Lily emerged through the front doors, stopping to shake hands with one of the bouncers who had dragged Colin out. She smiled ingenuously as she approached the officers. Maria watched as Margolis caught sight of her and held up his hand to stop her. Lily ignored him, pressing on until she was close enough to be heard, and for an interminable few minutes, both Evan and Maria watched, wondering what Lily could possibly be saying to him. Eventually, one of the officers followed the bouncer back inside the club, while Margolis and the other officer remained with Colin. Margolis was obviously furious, but still no move was made to cuff Colin. The events of the last half hour caused Maria's thoughts to ping-pong, wreaking havoc on her emotions. She'd been followed to the bar, which meant she'd been followed from the restaurant, which meant she'd been followed from home. He knew where she lived, and he'd followed her here. Her breath caught, and she distantly registered Evan's voice.
Are you okay?
She squeezed her upper arms. She wanted Colin to hold her, yet she was angry that he'd lost control. Or was she afraid for him? She wasn't sure. He knew where she lived, and he'd followed her here.
No,
she admitted, realizing that she was shaking.
I'm not.
She felt Evan slip an arm around her.
It's pretty messed up, that's for sure. If I were you, I'd be a wreck.
What's going to happen to Colin?
He'll be all right.
How do you know?
Because Lily looks calm, and Margolis looks pissed.
Maria studied the two of them, realizing that Evan was right. But everything had gone wrong tonight. A minute later, the officer who'd gone into the club returned to Margolis's side. They spoke for a couple of minutes before both officers reluctantly headed back to their squad car. By then, Lily was hurrying toward Evan and Maria. Evan let go of Maria to encircle Lily in his arms.
No charges, she said. They're letting him go.
What did you do? Maria asked.
I spoke to the waitress and the manager, and I simply told them the truth,
Lily replied,
that you were being stalked, and that Colin overreacted because you've been frightened, and Colin thought you might be in danger. They were surprisingly sympathetic, especially once I gave the waitress an extra large tip, paid for the drinks that were spilled, and offered the manager a little extra for his trouble.
Maria stared at her.
You bribed them? I did no such thing. I merely did my best to rectify the situation in a way that satisfied everyone involved. By the time the officer came to speak with them, they were both adamant that no charges be filed. Still, I will admit there was a moment when I wasn't sure it was going to work again.
Again?
It isn't the first time this has happened, Evan said.
Margolis dogged Colin's footsteps as Colin approached their group. To others, Colin probably appeared as controlled as he always did, but she noticed something in his expression that hinted at an understanding of how close he'd come to losing it all. He moved to her side as Margolis studied each of their faces. Colin stared back, unfazed, as did Evan and Lily.
The dynamic duo strikes again, Margolis sneered. How much did it cost you this time?
I don't have any idea what you're talking about,
Lily lied sweetly, her accent as sultry as ever.
Of course you don't, Margolis said. I wonder what the manager and the waitress would say if I put them under oath.
He let the comment hang with all its implications before finally going on.
But there's no reason for that, is there? Now that you've rescued your good friend Colin again.
There was no need to rescue him, Lily drawled. He did nothing wrong.
That's funny, because I recall something like this happening on at least two other occasions when you two were there.
Lily feigned confusion.
Are you speaking of those other occasions when Colin happened to be out with us and, again, did nothing wrong?
Keep telling yourself that. You're just postponing the inevitable. Colin knows who he is. Just ask him. He'll tell you.
He turned toward Colin.
Isn't that right, Colin? Since you like to convince everyone you're as honest as the day is long, even though you're always on the verge of exploding.
Maria saw Colin's eyes narrow as Margolis jerked his head at Evan.
You need to thank Evan here for pulling you away when he did. Had even one of those guys around you touched you, you and I both know that we would suddenly be spending a lot of time together, with you back in the cage and me telling the DA to throw away the key.
Colin didn't touch anyone, Evan interjected.
Margolis shifted the toothpick to the other side of his mouth.
I was thinking more along the lines of assault. I was told the waitress was terrified by the fact that Colin was screaming at her, and I've got a dozen witnesses in there who could vouch for that.
He just wanted to know who sent over the drink, Maria protested.
As soon as Margolis' eyes met hers, she felt herself flinch.
Oh, that's right. Because of the so-called stalker, right? I'll make sure to review the report for you.
Maria said nothing, regretting she'd chimed in.
Oh, wait. You haven't filed a report. Have you even talked to a lawyer?
She is a lawyer, Lily said.
Then it's even stranger, don't you think? All lawyers do is file reports.
He turned toward Maria.
I'll tell you what, though. If you ever do get around to it, ask for me, okay? Leave her out of this, Colin growled. Are you telling me what to do? Margolis demanded.
Yes, Colin said.
Or what? Are you going to hit me?
Colin continued to stare at him before reaching for Maria's hand. Let's go, he said, beginning to walk away, Evan and Lily close behind.
Go ahead, Margolis called out from behind them. I'll be around.
How much do I owe you? Colin said.
Let's worry about that later, okay?
Lily answered. They'd followed Evan and Lily back to Evan's place, the four of them congregating on the front porch. It had been a quiet ride, Maria's thoughts too fragmented for conversation, and Colin in no mood to break the silence. Even now, Maria felt like an observer to her own life.
What the hell were you doing tonight? Evan demanded. We've talked about this, and Margolis is right. What would have happened if Lily and I hadn't been there?
I don't know, Colin answered.
You damn well know exactly what would have happened.
Evan ran a hand through his hair.
Why the hell do you keep doing this? You've got to learn to control this thing.
Okay.
Don't say okay, Evan shouted. Like Lily? I'm sick of you saying that all the time because it's a cop-out. I thought we'd gotten past this last year, after that guy accidentally spilled his drink on Lily.
You're right, Colin said evenly. I made a mistake. I lost control.
Gee, really?
Evan spat out. He turned, starting for the front door.
Whatever. You two deal with him for now. I'm done.
The door slammed behind him, leaving the three of them on the porch.
You know that Evan's right, Colin, Lily said.
I wasn't going to hurt her.
That doesn't matter, she said, her voice soft. You're big and strong, and when you're angry, people can sense the innate violence within you. The poor waitress was cowering and crying, and you wouldn't let up until Evan put everything he had into pulling you away. And then I was almost certain you were going to hit him.
Colin's gaze dropped to the ground before slowly coming up again, and for a moment, his confidence was gone. In its place, Maria saw shame and remorse, maybe even a flash of hopelessness. It won't happen again.
Maybe, Lily said, kissing him on the cheek. You said that last time, too.
She turned toward Maria and offered a hug.
And I'm absolutely certain that all of this must feel both overwhelming and terrifying to you. If someone was stalking and taunting me, I would have already been off to Charleston by now to hide out with my parents. And knowing them, they'd send me out of the country. I'm just so sorry for what you're going through.
Thank you, Maria said. Suddenly exhausted, she barely recognized the sound of her own voice.
Would you like to come inside?
Lily asked when she pulled back.
I'm sure Evan is calmer by now and we can work through some options or ideas. Or we can just sit and listen if you feel like you need to talk.
I wouldn't even know what to say, she said. Lily understood, and with a gentle click of the door as it closed behind her, Maria and Colin were alone on the front porch.
I'm sorry, Maria, he mumbled.
I know.
Would you like me to bring you home?
In either direction, most of the houses were already dark.
I don't want to go home, she said in a small voice. He knows where I live.
Colin stretched out his hand.
Come on, he said.
You can stay with me. Leaving the porch, they walked around the side of the house toward the downstairs entrance. Once inside, Colin turned on the lights as he led the way. Hoping for any distraction from the lingering knot in her stomach, she took in the room. Average-sized, with a kitchen off to the right, and a small hallway directly ahead that no doubt led to the bedroom and bath. Surprisingly neat, without clutter piled on the coffee table or on the counters. Neutral color scheme for the furniture, with no photographs or personal items, like no one lived here at all.
This is your place?
He nodded. For now. Can I get you something to drink?
Just water, she said.
Colin filled two glasses in the kitchen, bringing one of them to her. She took a sip, suddenly remembering that she was being followed and seeing again Colin's anger as he demanded answers from the waitress, his muscles tense. She remembered the split second after Evan had jerked him off balance and the utter wildness and uncontrollable fury in his expression.
How are you feeling? He finally asked.
She tried to force the image away and realized that she couldn't.
Not good, she said. Not good at all.
Neither of them seemed to know what to say to the other in the living room, nor later when they were in bed together. Instead, simply needing to be held, Maria rolled over, resting her head on Colin's chest, conscious of the lingering tension in his body. She'd hoped that by staying here, with Colin beside her, she'd feel safe. But she didn't feel safe. Not anymore. And as she lay awake, staring into the darkness, she was beginning to wonder whether